From the Global Center of Greater Cincinnati in Cincinnati, Ohio, welcome to Worldview. In the next hour, we will explore our links to countries across the globe, and we will discover some of the world culture that is part of our local mosaic. The stories and perspectives that our guests bring to the program will challenge our preconceptions. Our mission is to learn more about how our region relates to the world and find out who we really are. I am Pat Niskode. On Worldview this evening, we spotlight the Asian tradition of Feng Shui, an ancient Chinese practice. Feng Shui was discussed and displayed at the Asian Culture Fest held last April in Cincinnati Museum Center. During the Asian Culture Fest, Diana Garber hosted a workshop on Feng Shui. Diana Garber is our guest this evening and talks with Worldview's Ann Kunimura. Feng Shui is an ancient Chinese practice believed to utilize the laws of both heaven, astronomy, and earth, geography, to help one improve life by receiving positive ki. Our guest Diana Garber applies this wisdom to a wide range of topics such as risk management, a global impact such as weather and economic trends, business application, and wellness. Right now, let's take a minute and look at the other world news. The news with people in other parts of the world think is important. Here is Matt Wallert.
This is Matt Wallert for Worldview and for some of the news that you may have missed from around the world. First, we'll go to Voice of America News. Mexican government fights organized crime. Despite recent setbacks and continuing violence, the government of Mexican President Felipe Calderon is continuing its war against organized crime, including drug cartels and kidnapping gangs. The news out of Mexico in recent days has been dominated by incidents of violence and brutality, but authorities have scored some significant gains. President Calderon has named a new interior minister to replace Juan Camilo Moreno, who died along with several other government officials in a plane crash in Mexico City on November 4th. The new minister is Fernando Francisco Gomez Mont, a lawyer and former legislator who belongs to the ruling National Action Party. His father was a founding member of that party. Gomez Mont says he will carry on Moreno's work of pushing for judicial reforms and fighting crime. He says he and President Calderon are committed to ridding Mexico of the violence that plagues the country, and that he will use all the resources of the government to do so. The installation of the new interior minister 1 week after the death of his predecessor is seen as a strong signal from President Calderon that his government will not pause in its struggle against the critical elements who have terrorized large parts of the nation. In the past few days, authorities have broken up a kidnapping gang in the northern city of Monterrey, arrested policemen accused of corruption in the city of Tijuana, and detained a group of men building a clandestine airstrip for drug smugglers in the Yucatan Peninsula. On Friday of last week, Mexican forces made their largest seizure of illegal firearms and military-type weapons in more than 20 years. The Mexican Army found the cache of 540 rifles, 165 grenades, 500,000 rounds of ammunition, and other items just across the border from McAllen, Texas. From France and the BBC News, French rail anarchists arrested. French police have arrested at least 10 people in connection with a series of attacks on France's rail network. Police say those arrested were probably involved in sabotaging overhead power cables that disrupted National Rail and Eurostar services over the weekend. It's believed they belong to a far-left anarchist group protesting against trains transporting nuclear waste. French President Nicolas Sarkozy congratulated investigators for their rapid and promising progress. The French Interior Ministry says suspects from the anarcho-autonomous movement were arrested in three cities, including Paris, after a months-long investigation. From the Latin American Business Chronicle, Colombia Free Trade Agreement next year. The U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement may be approved late next year despite President-elect Barack Obama's campaign rhetoric against it. While the United States Congress may vote on a free trade agreement with Colombia before Barack Obama becomes U.S. president in January, it's unlikely to do so, according to experts. The reality at this point is that, though possible, the likelihood of concluding Colombia in the lame duck is less than likely before, says Eric Farnsworth, vice president of the Council of the Americas. According to some sources, President George W. Bush had signaled that he planned to sign in a new stimulus package only if House Speaker Nancy Pelosi allowed a lame duck vote on Colombia. I think that it is unlikely, says Peter Hakim, president of the Inter-American Dialogue. It's hard to imagine Bush turning down a popular stimulus package at a time of grave economic crisis because it doesn't include the Colombia Free Trade Agreement. He would get everyone mad at him. This would also mean that the White House would have less influence over the contents of that package. Analysts also say it's risky since there may not be enough Democratic votes to ratify the Free Trade Agreement, and its defeat would be worse than a deferred vote. Just as importantly, Rahm Emanuel, who will be the White House chief of staff in the incoming administration of President-elect Barack Obama, rejected the idea on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos Sunday. You don't link those essential needs to some other trade deal, he said. Instead, it's more likely that the United States Congress will vote on the Colombia Free Trade Agreement late next year after the new administration asks for changes. To Nicaragua and the Tico Times, liberals approach U.S. ambassador as Nicaragua spirals into chaos. Alleging massive irregularities in Sunday's election, Managua mayoral candidate Eduardo Montalegre and some of his closest supporters met with U.S. Ambassador Robert Callahan this week to express concerns about apparent electoral fraud in the anti-democratic direction of the country. Montalegre, who ran on the Liberal Constitution Party, the PLC ticket, and declared victory Monday morning, rattled off several examples of apparent vote tampering by the Sandinista-controlled Supreme Electoral Council, the CSE, that favored Sandinista candidate Alexis Arguello. Although Montalegre claims his own vote count, based on the party's copy of each voting station's official ballot tally, shows he won with more than 51% of the vote in Managua, the official CSE count has Arguello 5 points ahead, making the Sandinista candidate the presumptive winner. With the CSE yet to present its final vote tally, Sandinistas and liberals continue to duke it out in the streets of Managua. 3 days into the post-electoral violence, the situation spiraled into something resembling anarchy. Bands of masked Sandinista youth armed with mortars, rocks, and clubs have blocked off whole sections of downtown, and opposing gangs continue to clash in the streets. Even reporters have been targeted. A journalist for Sandinista Radio was hospitalized after allegedly being pulled out of his car and stabbed in the streets by unknown assailants. Police have failed to restore any order, and President Daniel Ortega has remained in private since voting Sunday afternoon, a situation that has only fed the impression that no one is in charge of the country. And now we go to everyone's favorite part of the news, myself included, news from the lighter side. Let's do some election stuff. From Yahoo and the Lebanon Valley News, county treasurer defeated by teeny bopper student. From Haverhill, New Hampshire, a county treasurer who lost her bid for a fourth term last week to a 20-year-old Dartmouth College student from Montana blames her failed candidacy on brainwashed college kids. Republican Carol Elliott said students just voted for the Democratic ticket, which included Dartmouth junior Vanessa Sievers. Sievers won by nearly 600 votes out of 42,000 cast after targeting voters at Dartmouth and Plymouth State University through a $42 ad on the website Facebook. It was the brainwashed college kids that made the difference, Elliott, 66, told the Valley News of Lebanon. She said she had little faith that Sievers would fulfill her duties adequately. You've got a teeny bopper for a treasurer, said Elliott, who has held the position for 6 years. I'm concerned for the citizens of Grafton County. The part-time job pays $6,408 per year, and it involves keeping tabs on all county money, making investments, and making payments ordered by county commissioners. Seaver said Wednesday she was surprised by Elliott's brutal attack. She's never met me before, Seaver said. She has no idea what I'm like. Seaver's a geography and history major from Big Sky, Montana, said she has been active in politics for many years and has worked on numerous New Hampshire campaigns, ranging from the mayoral race in Lebanon to Bill Richardson's presidential campaign. I've always believed that being involved in local government is part of your responsibility as a citizen and is a way to get involved in your community, she said. Sievers went on to say that her age has nothing to do with her qualifications, noting that she has worked as a bookkeeper, managed her family's finances, and has been thoroughly researching investment options to prepare for her new job. She also took issue with the claim that college students were brainwashed. I don't know why people think college students are less informed than other members of the community. A lot of students get very, very involved in their communities and are involved in politics in the area, in doing community service, everything. I think college students are connected and sometimes know more than real citizens. I think we're just as real citizens as anyone else in the country. Well, in the words of Scooby-Doo and the Scooby-Doo show, it was all the fault of those meddling kids. I'm Matt Wallert, and that's The Worldview.
Thank you, Matt. Welcome back to Worldview. I am Pat Niskode. This evening we spotlight the Asian tradition of Feng Shui, an ancient Chinese practice. The Feng Shui tradition was discussed and displayed at the Asian Culture Fest last April in Cincinnati Museum Center. Our guest Diana Garber is the president and CEO of Intuitio Concepts. She lectures and delivers workshops for large and private events. Feng Shui is an ancient Chinese practice believed to utilize the laws of both heaven, astronomy, and earth, geography, to help one improve life by receiving positive ki. Our guest Diana Garber applies this ancient wisdom to a wide range of topics such as risk management, global impact such as weather and economic trends, business application, and wellness. Worldview's Ann Kinumura talked with our guest. Here is Ann.
Whatever your nationality, there are just certain elements of the human experience that are universal, one being the art and earth science of feng shui. Worldview Radio Show is very fortunate this evening to be able to share a conversation with a native Ohioan, but yet a world-renowned feng shui consultant. I would like to introduce Ms. Diana Garber to our show tonight. Welcome
Hi,
to the show.
Ann, thank you so much for having me. I'm honored to be here.
So I would like to start the show this evening by asking you to describe what is feng shui.
It really is our reaction to the environment. Feng shui itself literally stands for, the translation is wind and water. So wind is what shapes the earth and our environment, and water is the source of life. How I describe it is, does my environment make me feel safe and secure? You know that I consult with Ohio State University Medical Center, mm-hmm. and I was invited to partake in Grand Rounds, which is going around and talking to physicians and residents as part of their educational process. So taking a ethereal subject like feng shui, how I described it to them was, if you take the human cell and you put it into a nurturing environment, it's not only going to survive, it's going to thrive. If you take the human cell and you put it into a hostile environment, it's going to struggle and sometimes die. So it really is, it's our reaction to the environment. And the environment can be the landscape. It is certainly what's happening globally now with global warming. It is our body. It's our home. It's our workspace. It's our mind. Mm-hmm. So it's how everything reacts with everything else.
I understand that there are several different forms, different styles of feng shui. Would you share with us the different forms of feng shui?
There were about 30 methods out there. That grows all the time. The most popular forms are, especially in the Americas, it's called Black Sect, which is also known as Western Feng Shui. And that's where you have a Bagua, and based on Bagua, it's an eight-sided plan. And based on your front door, then that determines a health or a wealth area. That's what most people are familiar with. There is the Asian Indian form called Vastu. There is the Japanese form, which is Zen. There is an intuitive form, which you walk into an office or a home, and it's like you're not comfortable. That's the intuitive form of feng shui, which there's really not a formal training for. The form of feng shui that I do is the Chinese form, which goes back thousands of years. So it's called geomancy. Geo is the geography, and Mansi is the study of lines. Study of lines means man's impact to nature. So that is a more holistic approach to feng shui, and it's what's called as traditional, or also known as classic feng shui. I call it authentic because it was the original.
Do you find a lot of people understand these differences of feng shui, and how are you helping the traditional form come into light?
Most of the people that I encounter have read what's in the bookstores, which is mostly the Western form of feng shui. And it's a pretty simplistic approach to it. It's something that anybody can understand and apply. Has a lot to do with using crystals and mirrors and placement and decorating. Not many people have the distinction that there are different forms, so thank you for allowing to share that information. And really, very few people know of the authentic form. I would really classify that in the Americas, because outside the Americas, pretty much the Asian people won't make a move without having either their home or office looked at from a feng shui perspective, because they know this works, and it has been proven over, like I said, thousands of years.
Can you describe how it initially came to be?
It was very hidden, sacred knowledge. In the time of the dynasties, the monks were the ones who had the sacred knowledge. And when the dynasties fell and the knowledge started to make it out to the people, there were actually monks that were executed because they knew that this was very powerful information. That's part of the reason why in the cities in China, they don't do much with feng shui, but when you get out to the countryside, they still do. Now, there are cities that have been completely designed around feng shui. Singapore is one. And so those cities, I mean, with, you know, all of the population, all of the buildings, the lights, the people, I mean, they're very heavily populated. They're successful, and the crime is low because they have practiced feng shui.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And you would think more people would want to take part in this and learn about it, because it is so powerful and it's so effective, and a person's lives can really turn around. What are some of the things that you're doing to educate the American people about the great benefits of feng shui?
I do workshop as often as I can. I've done a lot of volunteer work, anything from battered women's shelters to doing workshops for Ohio State. I work with the Ohio Education, National Education Association. I'll go in and talk to hospitals, Rotary clubs. I spoke at the International Feng Shui Conference. And the thing is, anybody benefits from it. Everybody benefits from it.
So why would someone be resistant to it?
Well, a lot of people that I've talked with have a frame of reference that it's associated with religious aspects, and faith is very precious to all of us. And so when there's something that doesn't fit in the confines of that, then we might reject it. But authentic feng shui is based on science. There's actually over a dozen sciences that are involved. Quantum physics is very much a part of it, mathematics and so on. But there are forms of feng shui out there that do have a religious base. And, you know, it is about ritual and intention and chanting and so forth. But authentic feng shui is not based on religion.
You are listening to Ann Kinumira's conversation with Diana Garber on the ancient Chinese practice of feng shui.
Can you share an example of a feng shui project that you've worked in when you've had to deal with cynicism?
Yes. A client that I've worked with, and my clients are highly confidential. Now and again, I'll have one that is willing for me to share their story. So one that I think most folks in Ohio will relate to is Bob Evans Farms, the restaurant. Dan Evans, the former CEO, had a very severe health issue and had heard about me and called and said, you know, do you think this feng shui stuff would help me? And I'm like, well, let's find out. So I did an analysis of his house, and he followed my recommendations. And within 3 months, doing nothing medically different, his grand mal seizures completely went away.
Wow.
So he was very elated because really they were completely disrupting his life, and went to church and was sharing with his community about how excited he was.
Mm-hmm.
So he called me and said, you know, Diana, I would love to tell the world about, you know, this and you and the success story. But my community came back and said, oh, that's that witchcraft voodoo stuff. And I said, you know, Dan, bless you, because first of all, you didn't have to make this phone call. Thank you so much for letting me know that this has come up. So I went back down to see him at Canal Winchester at the farm. And the whole time he was ill, I said, did you visit the doctors? Well, yes, of course, because he was going to Mayo Clinic. And you were going to church, and you were praying, and you were still a very faithful man. And you ride the horses, and you're in nature, and you commune with nature and all of this. So none of those things stopped. Is that right? And he's like, yes. And, well, even in the Bible it says man will help, or God helps those who help themselves. And so feng shui is just one more tool for your toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was very grateful that he shared that with me. It does come up, but that's where people don't know what they don't know. And sometimes they go off of what they heard or what they've read. But if that's not an accurate depiction of what it is, that's why I'm so grateful to be able to share what feng shui is and what it is not.
Can you share some more success stories you've had?
I seem to have gotten into this niche of people with health crises.
Mm.
And I don't think there's any coincidence to that. My journey took me to feng shui because I personally have had 18 major surgeries.
Oh.
Just as many minor surgeries. I've had 5 babies. I have 1 living child.
Mm.
So for me, I was in survival mode. And exploring alternative methods because, for whatever reason, the path that I was on just kept more surgeries and more precious things being lost. So, studied natural medicines, almost became a naturopath, but it was when I came across feng shui that it really started to turn around. And I am a walking miracle, and I am proof that this works. So I've worked with many clients in stage 3, even stage 4 cancer.
Mm-hmm.
One lady was even in hospice, meaning she was terminal within 6 months. And their environment, their homes were making them sick.
Mm-hmm.
So when we figured out what that was about and changed that energy, literally these people are still here and having quality of life.
That's,
well, and a lot of people equate changing energy to the green movement, and I applaud the green movement. In other words, building a green home, you know, it's about clay-based versus latex and the, you know, gases that come out of the carpeting and making sure that it's built with sustainable and renewable resources, but that does not include feng shui.
Mm-hmm.
Feng shui comes from the energies that you can't see.
Thank you.
back with more of Ann Kunimura's conversation with Diana Garber in the second half of our program. You are listening to Worldview. Welcome back to Worldview. I am Pat Niskode. In the first half of our program, Diana Garber, president of Intuitive Concepts, spoke with Worldview's Ann Kunimura about the ancient Chinese practice of Feng Shui and its applications to address various modern-day issues. We continue as Diana Garber discusses the importance of numbers for Feng Shui.
And always curious about numbers, I understand that numbers have play a big role in Feng Shui.
That's how we basically diagnose the energy, is based on when the building was constructed. There's a numerical formula. Based on the compass reading, which is the magnetic influence, that's a numerical formula. So, not getting into all of it, but when you start to layer those numerical formulas, there's patterns of numbers that describe the energy. And typically what happens when I look at the energy of a building, well, I'll give an example of Ohio State University.
Mm-hmm.
OSU hired me to take a look at a building that they were going to put their Center for Integrative Medicine into. So they gave me the address. I went and crunched the numbers. Mm-hmm. In other words, did all the mathematics of it.
Yes.
And when I met with the board that was putting together the Center for Integrative Medicine, I said, if you move into this building, this is going to happen. There'll be these type of challenges, these obstacles. You know, it's not necessarily conducive to a wellness center. It's better for these type of businesses. And they were like, did you do research on this building? And I'm like, well, the research of Feng Shui, but not the history of the building. And they were like, well, the family that built the building and had their business there, and then the businesses successively, meaning somebody moved out of there, somebody moved in, moved out.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what had happened. So we implemented remedies. So we looked at different types of furniture. We looked at different types of flooring. We looked at different wall colors for different areas according to the energy that was there. And so that's what I mean by remedy. We put together an action plan. And when we did that, then the Center for Integrative opened. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, they've done really well.
Any more success stories you'd like to share with?
I mean, anything from a child that, you know, has chronic bedwetting and, you know, changing the position of the bed, figuring out the child's energy versus the bedroom. You know, they stop wetting the bed to, I'm working with a doctor right now that he has heart pressure. Mm-hmm. And when he implemented the remedies, I mean, he said he had pretty much instant relief from that. Now, this is not a substitute for medical advice. I'm not giving medical advice. I'm coming at it from a different angle. But when you go to a physician and they recommend their treatment plan, and then I take a look at the energy of the building and come up with basically a treatment plan for the building and the people in it, and when you put that together, it's very powerful. It's a holistic approach. That's what integrative means. One of my backgrounds is in disaster recovery. I was vice president at Bank One for their information technology, which is all of the computers.
Oh.
I was the disaster recovery manager. So when there was, you know, tornado, hurricane, you name it, I was on the team that would go out and assess the damage, invoke our recovery plans, get the employees back up and running, and get people back access to their money and safe deposit boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And by day, I would take a look at these buildings from our processes and procedures, because I was obligated to do so because of the federal auditors making sure that we were doing our due diligence.
Mm-hmm.
But evenings and weekends, I took a look at the building or the project from a feng shui perspective. And many, many times, the energy was there. The energy was there that building was going to have a disastrous attack by wind, which is tornado, that mm-hmm. year.
Mm-hmm.
Or that the water energy was, you know, very, very strong. If there's double water energy, then that can mean flood, that can mean hurricane. I mean, time and again, these type of occurrences can happen. Even for me, personally, I was supposed to be in Thailand in 2005. And a client of mine called. I mean, they'll keep coming back because great things keep happening for them. Well, they got their wish on the property that he did for them in Cape Cod. Well, then they ended up buying a property in St. Martin, which is West
wow.
Indies.
Fantastic.
So they called me right before New Year's, and she was like, you know, would you please, please, you know, go down, take a look at this property because we want to build it out and we want this, but we want to make sure it's according to the feng shui principles. And it's like, well, I'm scheduled to be in Thailand. And she's like, you know, is there any way? And I was like, well, okay. So so changed my schedule. Literally, when we landed in St. Martin, it came across the air that the tsunami had hit Thailand.
Oh.
I was supposed to be there.
Yes.
So needless to say, when I got to the villa, I called her and I said, you probably saved our life. Thank you.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's very preventative. I mean, you can take a mm-hmm. look at the risks mm-hmm. of a person, mm-hmm. of a building. And once you've identified what the risk factors are, you can say, these are acceptable risks. These are unacceptable risks. What do I do about it?
Mm-hmm.
That's what feng shui is. And especially with my background in risk management, I mean, it's just that's a lot of what I do.
Mm-hmm. It's fantastic yeah. wisdom. How many continents have you practiced feng shui on?
Four continents. But when I think of that, I put the Euro-Asia continent together.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, lots of different countries.
Now, do you find more, I guess the answer is yes, but more of an openness to what you're offering in other countries versus Ohio?
It's opening here. So the answer to that, in the beginning, mm-hmm. I mean, 25, 30 years ago, you didn't hear about feng shui here.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a reason that it's becoming more pronounced. That has to do with timing.
Mm.
Over the last 40 years, the energy has been metal energy, and that's about accumulation.
How many years?
Last 40 years.
Mm.
Metal. Feng shui is based on the five elements, fire, earth, metal, water, wood. And timing has to do with the numbers, which tells us the elements.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last 40 years, we've been involved in the metal energy. So metal is making the right decisions. It's accumulation, which is accumulation of knowledge, living in the right neighborhoods, looking at having a portfolio, you know, having that investment and so forth. But in 2004, we entered period eight.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll be for the next 20 years. So it's 2004 to 2023. We've entered period eight, which is the period of mountain. Mountain means we've stopped and said, okay, so I've got all this stuff, but does it make me happy?
Mm-hmm.
Does it help my kids? Does it make me feel safe and secure?
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of us right now are wondering about that, which the world economy is reflecting.
Mm. Of course, yes.
And so what's happening with the economic crisis is really conforming to what the feng shui energy is, and that's that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results.
Mm-hmm.
We can't continue to consume the environment
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and hoard money. Feng shui mm-hmm. is about flow, flow out, flow in.
Mm-hmm.
So when... And we are very blessed in the United States that we've had a lot of flow in. We have accumulated. We live in really big houses, in many cases
mm-hmm.
more house than we need.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also about giving back.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is about giving back to Dufar and helping out with starvation and, you know, giving back to our communities. And when you block that flow, then there's a wake-up call. And that's what we're going through right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is the hungriness, the consumption, overconsumption. We've taken more than we've needed, and now mm-hmm. we've got to remedy that.
Now, since we're going into a mountain time period for the next 20 years that began in 2004, how does a potential war, or what direction do you think we're going to go in with during this mountain period?
2009 is we're in an 8-Earth mountain period from 2004 to 2023, but every year has its energy. Every month has its energy. Every day has its energy. 2009 is a fire year.
Mm.
So fire still means tempers, righteousness, explosions, war, mm-hmm. terrorism, and we've already started to shift the energy. And that's what feng shui is about. You talk about risk management, knowing that it's a fire year. Well, let me give you another example, the weather.
Mm-hmm.
This year, 2008, is a one water year. Well, at the beginning of the year, we had lots of snow, lots of water, lots of rain, lots of floods.
Mm-hmm.
I was getting calls from Scottsdale, their Starbucks pipe burst in the basement, and they had water, and, mm-hmm. you know. But 2009 being a fire year, we're going to go into a drought.
Mm.
So even when I talk with farmers, and I'll say, you know, based on being a fire, earth, metal, water, wood year, these are the characteristics of it. So, you know, if you adjust your fertilizer, you'll do better with crops and we'll end up with less pollution in the watersheds. So it's those, and the farmers will say, this makes so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
It is just common sense because it follows the seasons, it follows the almanacs, which, you know, most people look at anyway because it's moon cycles. I mean, it's not woo-woo, far-out kind of stuff. It's very common sense.
Okay, knowing that 2009 is going to be a fire year, what are some other basic methods anybody can use to help prevent more fires this year?
That it's going to be a fire year, that's a very good intuitive direction. It does mean that there will be more fires. And so I've contacted some fire departments to go in to talk to them to let them know that, yes, 2009, we're probably going to see more than our share of, you know, fires in the landscape and fires in people's homes. So knowing that, I would recommend everybody take a look at their electrical outlets.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're overloading an outlet, mm-hmm. then mm-hmm. share the load. Have your, you know, outlets checked. Hire an electrician to come in. I mean, that would be so much mm-hmm. less expensive than mm-hmm. having, you know, something trip in the wall and, you know, then you've got damage control.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a lot less expensive to be proactive than it is to be reactive.
Why are they saying that 2009 is a year of the ox? Where does the animal ideas, where do the animal ideas come from?
There's 12 animals that are of the Chinese astrology. They actually believe the lore goes that when Buddha was ready to transcend, that a turtle came out of the water. And then based on the shapes of the back of the turtle, it represented 12, and that there were 12 animals that came to be with Buddha as he was transcending. And so it's those 12 animals that now are what is called the Chinese astrology. And each of the animals have characteristics. So as an example, the ox, which 2009 is the year of the ox, if you think about the ox in its natural habitat, it's usually a working animal. So you take it into the field, and as it's plowing through, it's pretty determined, and it's going to get that job done, and it's pretty strong.
Mm-hmm.
So an ox, when it's in balance, is very stable. You know, they're considered to be the householder, loving a family, protective of family.
Okay, looking a little bit beyond, what is 2010 going to bring?
Oh, let's see. That will be an 8-year, which is earth, and that's mountain. And so that's going to be that. That's probably when the economy is going to start coming back, because 8 represents prosperity.
Listening to Ann Kinumura's conversation with Diana Garber on the ancient Chinese practice of Feng Shui.
Are there any case studies or studies available that one could check into if one wanted to learn about practical ways that they can bring feng shui into their life?
Very few case studies have been written in regards to feng shui. That momentum is changing because we are trying to, at least those who are practicing the scientific version of feng shui, we're doing more with that. I personally have written case study, and if people are interested, they can email me and I will send it out. It is not on my website yet.
Mm-hmm.
One study that comes to mind, which I think everybody can relate to, mm-hmm. there is an MD that did a study. It was not under the umbrella of feng shui. It was more a color study, but took a group of children and put them into a blue room, and the children were fine. Move these children to a red room, they became agitated, combative.
Mm-hmm.
Put them back in the blue room, and they returned to their normal, sweet selves. These children had no sight.
Oh, you're kidding.
Color
Amazing.
Resonates energy.
Hmm.
So that's something that we don't think about. But when I work with hospitals, medical centers, doctor's offices, prison systems, even the school systems, I recommend we use the color red with a lot of discretion, because it actually brings out the fight or flight syndrome. I mean, truly, just seeing the color red can make your heart beat faster. speaking of colors, everybody, according to their birth date, is associated with one of the numbers, which is 1 through 9.
Mm-hmm.
So all of us are either fire, earth, metal, water, or wood. Based on that, that tells us about energy colors. Now, we all like to look slim and trim,
mm-hmm.
so we dress according to eye, hair, and skin tone. But this is about energy. When you wear your good energy colors, you are more focused, you feel better, and you're better able to greet the world. So I have that information on my website. It's an article called What's My Trigram? For figuring out what your energy number is. And when you look at your energy number, you also see what your energy colors are. And I hear from people all the time what a difference it makes.
Diana, is there anything else you'd like to share about feng shui?
Well, that we're talking about less sunlight, and we're going to be sleeping more. Sleeping directions would be something that everybody could benefit from. Again, it's based on our birth information, which is month, day, and year. Everybody has 4 good directions, mm-hmm. and everybody has 4 not-so-good directions. I never say bad because there's not right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But there's 4 directions that work better for us. And back to OSU. OSU referred somebody to me, and she has sleep apnea. And I went over to her home, and something as simple as changing the position of her bed. She wrote a testimony, and it's mm-hmm. on the website.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, Diana, if when I met you I had 100% sleep apnea, I now mm-hmm. have 0. She said,
that's
it changed my life.
Amazing.
Well, when we sleep better, we feel better, and mm-hmm. we can handle stress a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's something, colors and sleeping direction, that's very powerful for anybody listening, and I strongly encourage you to use that information.
Thanks for the great interview, Anne. Diana Garber is the president and CEO of Intuitive Concepts and can be reached at www.intuitiveconcepts.com. And that's our show for this week. We welcome your questions and comments regarding anything you have heard on Worldview. Email us at wacgc@globalcincinnati.org or call us at 513-621-2320. More information is also available at our website, globalcincinnati.org. The views and opinions expressed in this program are those of our guests and not necessarily those of this station or Global Cincinnati. I am Pat Niscode, executive producer of Worldview. Our production manager is John Hoffman. Special thanks to Ann Kunimura for help with the feng shui music and to George Son and the staff of WMKV for their assistance. Worldview is a production of the World Affairs Council at Global Center of Greater Cincinnati. I am Pat Niscode. Join us next week for another edition of Worldview. Have a pleasant week.